Hi, folks. This is CBD of the Cut Jib Newsletter Worldwide Podcasting Network. I'm here in rather ugly and cold northern New Jersey, but that's good because that means that winter is coming, and I love winter. Unfortunately, we do not have JJ Sefton. Apparently, life intrudes sometimes, but we do have a special guest, and that is Jim Lakely of the Heartland Institute. Jim is the Executive Vice President and Director of Communications at Heartland. And if you have never heard of Heartland, go there right now, heartland.org. Every time Jim is on, I poke around his website or their website, and I find more and more stuff to read. And it's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful resource for conservatives, and it's not just climate. They address all sorts of things. In fact, we're going to talk about one of those things today. Jim, how are you doing?
I am doing just great. I am. I'm sure your listeners are also disappointed that JJ will not be with us, but I can guarantee that between the two of us, CBD, there will be plenty of misanthropy to go around. So it'll be great, just like normal.
Well, the problem with having Jim Lakely on this podcast is that he almost always brings uniformly depressing stuff. And at the end of the podcast, I want to slit my wrists. But sadly, it's data driven, it's factual, and it's important stuff to hear. Anyway, Jim, what have you got for us today?
Well, one of the centers at the Heartland Institute, and we're a think tank that's been around for 41 years, a free market think tank. Some say we're conservative, some say we're libertarian. You know, we like to self-label as free markets and freedom oriented, but regardless. We have the Glenn C. Haskins Center on Emerging Issues, and one of the biggest emerging issues over the last several years has been the rise of socialism, and particularly the trend of younger voters embracing socialism. And so right before, actually, the election of Zohra Mamdani as the communist mayor of New York City, we submitted some questions working with our friends at Rasmussen Reports, and because we just wanted to dig down a little deeper into this, the appeal, it seems, that socialism has among especially younger voters. And so we polled younger voters, that is voters under the age of 40, so from 18 to 39. And we asked them a series of questions about socialism and socialist policies and about Zohra Mamdani. We also had some questions about artificial intelligence in there. We'll be releasing that part of the poll here very, very soon. So you can find all of the poll results at heartland.org. They're featured right there on the front page, very easy to find. And you can look at the poll questions themselves and the crosstabs and everything. It's fully shared with the public. But as usual, CBD, the results were discouraging when it comes to young people's views of socialism and socialist policies. So some of the, like, you can just go through some of the top line results here. 62% of young voters said that they would support more government housing and a nationwide rent freeze. That is despite the fact that everywhere rent freezes are implemented in cities like New York City and San Francisco, what results is a miserable housing market in which the market is grossly distorted and no new housing is made. And the affordability problem in your city will get exponentially worse if you implement those policies. But, oh well, 62% of young voters said that they would like to have that. Here's something that is really fun. 58% of young voters support government-run grocery stores in every town in America. Of course, a government-run grocery store was one of Zohra Mamdani's big talking points when he was running for mayor of New York City. Your listeners are very astute and very plugged into the news. They will probably remember that there was actually an attempt to have a government-run grocery store in Kansas City that very quickly became a complete failure, and government-run grocery stores are like the old grocery stores in the Soviet Union, where there's nothing on the shelves and people are starving. You know, when we got the results of that question in our poll, I would, you know, my mind flashed back to, I think there was a picture in my mind of Boris Yeltsin or Gorbachev touring an American grocery store and just could not believe that that the land of plenty could be even that plentiful. And you hear those stories from, I have friends who have moved to the United States in the Chicagoland area from formerly Eastern Bloc countries. And they've been here for decades. They still sometimes marvel at, because they remember what life was like growing up in the in a socialist hellhole behind the Iron Curtain. And they still, decades later, are amazed at what they see in an American grocery store or a Target or a Walmart that have enormous grocery stores. So that's kind of depressing that young people want government-run grocery stores. And then it's not just about socialism, CBD. It's about a lot of the questions we asked ultimately are trying to understand what younger voters' problems are, what things they worry about, what things about life in America today that is not working for them. And that's why they've now become, I think, even more than just socialism curious, but really want to go full into it. 44% of all young voters think that their economic future and personal happiness will be worse than their parents. Only 22% of young voters think it will be better in the future. That is the reverse. That is the inverse of what the American dream is. That is the reverse of what every parent wants to, wants for their children. And frankly, it's against the pattern of the American system over the last 100 years or more, is that not only is there confidence that your children will live a better life than you, it's been seen that your children live a better life than you, and on and on and on it goes, like I said, for at least more than a century. And now young voters today, they have, they have a lot less confidence in that than they used to. And it's because of the modern, the economy that they feel isn't working for them. They feel the American dream is out of reach. And when you have a significant number of voters that are young and have their whole life ahead of them, and they are now thinking that socialist policies are the only way for them to not just experience the economic prosperity and happiness of, say, the boomers or Gen X, but think that socialism is the only way they will have a chance at that at all. And again, I always bring you depressing polling news, but I think it's important for the American people to know this, and especially, I would say, for the Republican Party to know this, because these feelings, the way these young voters look at the world is real, and you can't just, mouth bromides, and you need to have real solutions. You need to have better communication in how and why free markets are the way to prosperity and not socialism.
And folks, you thought I was joking when I said that I feel like slitting my wrists after Jim Lakely is on. There are so many reasons for this failure in communicating the glories of market economies. We can go back to the 1960s with the beginning of the destruction of academia, and then the co-option of K through 12 teaching by a rabidly left-wing teachers union. Then you can blame, boy, you name it, and they're responsible. These non-governmental organizations that push their left-wing policies onto state educational organizations. It goes on and on and on, but the reality, of course, is that it's happening right now. And I look at these three bullet points: 58% support government-run grocery stores. That's absolutely idiotic, as you've described. The idea of government-run anything in the private sector is anathema to what American exceptionalism is. And yet, I hesitate to call them ignorant, because they might very well have absorbed the lessons that they were taught in school, but those lessons were incorrect. 62% said they would support more government housing. I lived and a nationwide rent freeze. I lived in Berkeley, California, which has essentially, boy, doesn't have government housing, but it's got the most obnoxious and horrid rent control I can think of. And it's awful. It's absolutely awful. It creates misery among renters, and there's no way around that.
Yeah.
And then 44%, their future is worse than their parents. Wow. I don't know what to say about that. It's depressing. And the problem, I think, as you've articulated, is that there are no easy fixes. This isn't simply a matter of communicating the reality of the economy, because the reality of the economy is difficult for some people.
Yeah, and especially if you're younger and you're trying to get ahead. I mean, younger voters are just those under 40, and that's middle age, right? Like 39, you're in early middle age, and you feel like the American system that you've grown up in is not working for you. Digging deeper into just this part of the poll, about housing affordability, it's not they're not wrong to think that they can never afford a home, because they're trying, and it's not. It doesn't seem achievable for them unless they get, some inheritance from a boomer relative that can leave them enough for a down payment. They feel trapped. But, 70% of self-identified conservatives said that they believe the cost of housing in America has reached a crisis level. On the government run, so this goes across party, and the interesting thing is that, Donald Trump's victory in November 2024 was due in good part to younger voters disillusioned with Biden's America. And after only 1 year, they're disillusioned with Trump's America now, too. Now, maybe that's not really fair to Donald Trump. He can only do so much, and especially only in not even in a year. But, on the government-run grocery stores, 53% of conservatives, young voters who identify themselves as conservatives, 53% support government-run grocery stores in order to reduce
I want to
the
talk
cost of
about
the.
that. That's because 53% of them obviously don't know what a conservative is, because a conservative, by definition, would not support a government-run grocery store. So that identifies a failure in the conservative movement in America that is profound. And maybe I'm making too big a deal out of that, but I think that's a big deal.
Well, I take it at face value that the respondents know what a conservative is. And
But if they
frankly,
identify.
the same number of moderates, 53% of people identified as moderates, also support government-run grocery stores. So, it's amazing. In fact, one of the things about this poll, if you can take their political ideology, self-identification at face value, one of the questions in our poll, and this is great, great news, not just for Zohran Mamdani, but for AOC. AOC is definitely going to challenge Chuck Schumer, and or run for president in 2028, because more than half of young, and these are likely voters, so these are very politically active young people, 51% of all young voters said they would like to see a Democratic socialist win the White House in 2028. 42% of people identify as conservatives, and 42% who identify as moderates also want a Democratic socialist, those are the words we used, to win the White House in 2028. Democratic socialism, or labeling somebody a socialist, not too long ago, CBD, was kind of a political liability, to say the least, among the general electorate. What this polling shows is that those are no longer dirty words, that those are words that are having a lot of appeal, and growing appeal among especially young voters.
Is this the Soviet, or is this the Imperial Russia in 1917?
It
Because it sure worked out for the Soviet Union for 70 years.
sure did. I mean, look at, just looking at Mamdani. I mean, he's, the smiling conservative, AOC, the hot, or I'm sorry, the smiling socialist, and AOC, the hot socialist, right? So those are the brands that they are, that they have created, and like it or not, and my answer is not, don't like it. This messaging and those packages, as it were, are becoming increasingly appealing to the rising generation.
So I have a personal anecdote. Our younger brat lives in New York City. She's got a good job in Midtown, and she lives in a very nice apartment building near the park. And her rent, they just got their rental agreement for the coming year, and it went up 7%. And she was here for dinner one night, and she said, "You know, that's a lot of money, and how is that legal?" Now, she grew up in a house with a rabid, foaming at the mouth conservative who was a champion of free markets. And she understands what a free market is. She voted against Mamdani. She voted for Donald Trump, but for other reasons. And at some level, I thought, "What? Where did you go to school? What the hell happened to you? Do you not know what a free market does?" But apparently, the misinformation about pressure, oh boy, it's even more profound than that. They simply do not understand economics. They do not understand the damage that top-down control can do to an economy. And I mean, where do you start fixing that?
Well, you have to fix that, obviously, in the education system. You and I, CBD, are both Gen X, so we were in elementary school and maybe high school during the Cold War, and it was a very clear demarcation line. Two global powers. One embraces free market capitalism and freedom. One makes blue jeans, the other makes misery. It was very easy to draw those lines and to have those conversations because the contrast between our economic and political systems, between the Soviet Union and the United States, was so stark. And, also taught in schools for decades. Today's kids, well, we don't live in that world anymore. And that's why it has taken a while. But socialism is no longer a dirty word. It is taught in our schools that it is a social good, that it is better to, they teach socialism in schools as just sharing and being kind. That's the introduction into this idea. What they don't teach is the economic and personal freedom results of a socialistic society, that you lose everything. And so it has to start in the schools. Happily, I was just talking to one of our fellows, Chris Talgo, who is in our Emerging Issue Center, who works on socialism issues. I believe the state of Florida, with Governor DeSantis, has signed a bill or is about to sign a bill mandating that communism is taught in schools, basically the evils of communism, the real history, the truth about communism and communist societies is taught in schools, to counter the smiling face of socialism stuff that these kids have been brought up on basically their entire life, especially Gen Z. So that's state by state, those kinds of bills need to be instituted so that the state, which has the right to dictate curriculum in the public schools, needs to make sure that the truth about socialism, that which leads to communism, there is no soft socialism. Socialism is, by definition, the reduction of personal liberty and private economic and personal economic rights. That is just what it is. Socialism does lead to that to varying degrees, but it always leads to the same place, which is totalitarianism. Florida is going to start teaching that to young people because that is the truth, and more states need to follow suit.
Wow. I need to move to Florida.
Yeah, well, that's a lot of people are. It
Yeah,
is
that's true.
in a crazy world, it seems to be the most sensible place when it comes to public policy these days, that's for sure.
Let's talk a little bit about Mamdani. He ran. First of all, I'd like to argue one point. I think he's an Islamist first and a socialist second. He's using socialism or democratic socialism as a tool to further the goals of the Twelvers, which of which he is an acolyte. he puts a pretty face on it, but he is at heart an Islamist. New York is socialist already.
Yeah.
The New York City Council is about as lunatic left as Mamdani is.
We used to call Bill de Blasio Bill de Camio, right? And
Right.
he
And
see
actually, Bill de Blasio was slightly to the right of his city council,
Yeah, right.
which is insane. But what he did was he presented socialism as this gentle and beautiful, and you described it well, that this, you know, it's just being kind. You know, we need to be nice to people. They need to live in New York. They need to have low rents, and they need to have cheap food or inexpensive food. And isn't that wonderful? And let's just do that. Oh, and let's have free buses. Now, the reality of that, and I don't think that Mamdani is too stupid to know that he can't do any of those things without state approval. New York is a complex management structure, and a lot of it goes through Albany. So the idea of making the buses free, yeah, good luck with that. That's not going to happen. And changing the rent control laws, that's going to be very, very difficult also. Government-run grocery stores, how is that going to work? But he presented it anyway, you know, these broad strokes of the kindness of socialism. But what he can do is implement his Islamist policies, and that's what scares me. That's what concerns me about Mamdani.
Well, I would like to see what those Islamist policies look like and how they are articulated. I guess the first step of that was, I believe he declared New York City as an adherent to international law, and that if Bibi Netanyahu ever steps foot on the soil or the pavement of New York City, that he's going to be quickly snatched up. and who knows what's going to happen to him? But yeah, I mean. Look, you know, it's like when it was pretty obvious that Mamdani was going to win, and you know, the city of New York and the politicians of New York. I mean, when your option to save the city is a repulsive person like Andrew Cuomo, and he'll be the one to save the city from the inexperienced but radical smiling maniac of Zoran Mamdani. I don't know if you could be saved. I think you need to experience real pain. The problem is that New York City is part of the United States, and we need to care about it because this is the largest city of the United States. You know, I saw all these stories of how real estate prices in Connecticut are going through the roof immediately because of, again, market forces. People are wanting to get the hell out of the city. The people with means will be able to get out of New York City. The people without means, the middle class people, are going to really bear the brunt of all of this. They're the ones who actually ride the buses that are now going to be rolling drug dens and homeless shelters. So they won't be able to actually use those. They're the ones who are on the train, you know, on the subway, being set on fire or being stabbed. And so, you know, it's always, and this is the way it works with socialism, man. And you know this very well, CBD. Socialism is not really that big of a problem if you are a person of extreme positive economic means. If you make $500,000 a year or millions as a hedge fund manager or as an actor in the Upper West Side and all that stuff. Socialism doesn't really affect your life because you're wealthy enough to avoid the consequences. It's everybody else who has to end up living in misery. And one of the things about socialism, I don't think people think about or talk about it enough, but they do see it. And is one of the things of, you know, in a capitalist system, people don't really blame the people for the failure of, you know, the people in general, on a broad stroke. Like, it's not the people's fault that capitalism doesn't work because it does work. But whenever socialism starts to fail, it is always the fault of the people. It's like, you're just not socialism. You're not communism enough. You're not a good enough commie. That's why this is failing. That's why, you know, with the, you had mentioned the Bolshevik Revolution. You know, your viewers probably do not have to Google kulak, but if they don't know what that term refers to, they are welcome to do it or ask Grok. Grok will probably give you a good rundown of that. There are always scapegoats, and often it is a violent react. It's a violent, what the regime, what a socialist and communist regime wants is a violent backlash against a targeted scapegoat for the failure of communism or socialism. And that's what's going to happen in New York City eventually, is that as failure after failure piles up, blame will be placed on those who are completely innocent and are the actual victims of the system. But that's what history shows us will happen. And there's no reason to think that just because this is the United States and we're Americans, that the regular pattern of a socialist communist society will not repeat itself in the in right here at home.
Mom, Donnie also has a convenient scapegoat in Hochul, the governor of New York, who has come out in gentle rebuke of some of his policies, and of course Donald Trump, who is the root of all evil in America. So I think that he's going to be able to defer some of that that lashing out against the people of New York by lashing out against the his political superiors. But let's get back to the Islamist portion of his lunacy, and I think that he's going to implement it in some very destructive ways. The Jews in New York City, which and they make up a huge portion of New York City, are targets. There's no argument about that. The New York City police understand that. That Jews are a target, in particular Jews who wear traditional clothing, and they are protected more or less. That will go away. They will no longer be particular targets for police activity, and I think that's going to cause some significant problems. I think that he's going to elevate Islam in the hierarchy of the thousands and thousands of probably unconstitutional programs that New York funds. They, Islamic outreach centers and Islamic prayer rooms and schools and all sorts of that kind of stuff. And that is going to change the tone in New York City to sort of an Islamist forward tone. And that is going to be destructive and violent, I think, within a couple of years. And
What? Go
go ahead.
ahead. No, I mean, what happened to the left's absolute dedication to the separation of church and state? That used to be a really big deal among progressives. Why have we heard nothing about that in New York City, and as you're describing?
Well, you know
Very
the answer.
strange. Yeah, of course we know the answer.
Yeah, the unholy alliance between Islam and the left. The left thinks that it can beat Islam, and Islam is confident that it can beat the left. Now, I direct your attention to the Ayatollah Khomeini, who what you know found common cause with the communists in Iran in the late 70s, and when he took power in 1979, one of the first things he did was kill about 30,000 of them. That's how it works. You described it very, very well, about 10 minutes ago. That's what happens in repressive authoritarian countries. Whether it's communist or whether it's Islamist, it doesn't really matter. You go after your enemies and you kill them. Maybe they won't be killed in New York City, but they will certainly be marginalized and they will certainly be threatened and they will certainly be pushed out.
Yeah, I mean, New York City, as you were describing all of that, CBD, I was born in New York City. I moved out when I was 8 years old, but I always kept an eye on what was going on in the city of my birth, especially in the late 80s and early 90s. You might remember a character. Well, he's still prominent today, Al Sharpton. He specialized, it seemed, in agitating the black community, the black leftist community in New York, against the Jews, and he called them white interlopers in black neighborhoods, because they owned things, they owned stores that people needed, right? And so that's terrible, because they're Jews. And he was instrumental in sparking the Crown Heights riots. So there's unfortunately, in the most Jewish city in America, there has been the Jewish community, especially the Hasidic Jewish community, has had to look over their shoulders at their fellow New Yorkers from time to time with increasing worry. And it's been a while, but I think it's if it's not going to come back now, I would be completely shocked because the all of as you just laid out CBD, all of the pieces are in place for it to be another bad maybe decade for Jews in New York City. I didn't look up the Jewish vote in the mayoral election.
One third voted
One
for
third
Mamdani.
of Jews voted for Mamdani.
Yeah,
Okay,
which
well.
is actually, believe it or not, I'm a little surprised it was that low.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, so.
Now I can't vouch for the data. So, but that's what I have read. Whether it's
Right.
true, it sounds like it's in the ballpark.
Yeah, you say one third. If one or three had voted for Mamdani, that's too
Yeah.
many.
Judaism in New York City is odd because there's a huge population of devout Orthodox, and then
Right.
there's a very large population of Hasidim, the people that, if you want to draw a caricature of a Jew, it's the guy with the funny hat and wearing the long robe and silk slippers and payas, and he looks weird.
Right, the movie Yentl, right?
And they are Jewish. They practice Judaism. But there's a huge population, probably larger than the Orthodox and the Hasidim, of thoroughly assimilated Jews whose true religion is progressivism.
Right.
And sadly, they speak for the Jews of New York City. And I've said this before, but eating bagels and lox on Sunday afternoons it does not make you a Jew. Defending Judaism, defending the historical homeland of the Jewish people, that's what makes you a Jew. And sadly, a lot of New York City's Jews do not defend Israel, do not defend Judaism. And what they do is they use Judaism as a shield to protect themselves against criticism for their progressive policies. That to me is unbelievably offensive because Judaism is not a progressive religion. It is a very conservative religion.
Right.
Unlike true progressivism, it puts women on a pedestal. The role of women in Judaism is truly honored rather than just another pressure group among the left. And the role of the individual is also quite important in Judaism, and that, of course, is anathema to progressive politics.
Right.
So how they justify these contrasting views is interesting to me, although at this point I simply don't care. They voted against their self-interest, and it's going to bite them in the ass, and very, very hard, and very, very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, just to maybe put a bow on this one. I mean, as you were talking there, CBD, I was thinking to one of the last videos I saw of an endorsement of Mamdani right before the election in New York City was very proudly Mandy Patinkin, famous
Oh,
actor,
Jesus.
sitting there smiling, from The Princess Bride, Inigo Montoya, and all that, and of course a legend on Broadway. Decides to do a video that I saw on X, him smiling and endorsing Zoran Mamdani, and of course Mandy Patinkin is Jewish, and that is the example that came to mind as you said that to many Jews in New York City, progressivism is their real religion. They're Jewish by ethnicity only, right? And but progressivism is their real religion. It's just. I'm gonna, if things go bad, look, we're not hoping for this. And there's a part of me that doesn't even want to predict this, the parade of horribles that you had described earlier. But if these things come to pass, it's going to be hard for me to get that image of Mandy Patinkin endorsing wholeheartedly Zoran
Yeah.
Mamdani for mayor of New York City out of my head.
Oh boy. I don't want you on the show anymore.
Oh, come on. I have
No,
a good
I'm kidding.
time.
I'm kidding. Please come back. So we talked about the state of the economy tangentially. But I would like to get your perspective on the true state of the economy versus the perception that is being created by a rapidly anti-Trump media. I'm insulated from this for the most part. I have to trust the data that I read. And it is complex, and it does not show me a fantastic economy. I know that's sort of a depressing bit of analysis on my part, but I have to be honest. But again, I'm not an economist, so but I'm curious what you think about that, the true state of the economy versus what we are being shown.
Well, I think about it in a few ways. One, I think about the true state of the economy during Biden's 4 years, where immediately he flooded the economy with money. The Inflation Reduction Act, just the Treasury Department printing money. Warned by real economists that this is going to put inflation out of control. People kind of forget that we had, 20% inflation year to year at one point. And inflation was just, it was the worst inflation, inflationary economy we'd seen really since Jimmy Carter, which is what helped get Ronald Reagan elected in 1980. But the absolutely fake economic data we were getting out of Biden's regime, out of Biden's government, where every single time the jobs numbers, the preliminary reports would come out, and it would be one number, and then a month and a half later they would revise those numbers downward, often downward severely,
Very quietly, of course.
very quietly, of course. But to his credit, Donald Trump made it an issue on the campaign trail, saying, I think there was something, just trying to go by memory, 800,000 fake jobs
Yeah.
that didn't really exist, that the Biden regime tried to tell you existed and they didn't. So we were suffering, as it were, under fake economic data every single day for 4 straight years. And of course, we had a media that was interested in propagating those lies, that propaganda, for 4 years. But look, the gasoline prices, I live here in Northern Virginia. Gasoline prices are not yet under $3 a gallon, but they were for about a week. I saw $2.89 once when I drove by. Prices at the grocery store do not seem to have gone down much yet. I think that's legit. People can see that for themselves. But an economy is a hard thing to turn around on a dime. We have seen it happen in other countries. Look at Argentina, for instance, basically going full libertarian on economic policies, turn that country around in a matter of 18 months, 24, 2 years. So we do have to remember that, economic policies need to be set by legislation, not by executive orders and whatnot from Donald Trump. And to its great discredit, this Republican Congress has done almost nothing to help implement free market and conservative economic policies that will start to turn this economy around in a real way. I mean, we've seen some improvements, and things like closing the border, deporting people who are holding jobs and should not be here. I think I saw just this morning on X that Marco Rubio has revoked the visas of, I think, at least 100,000 people
Yeah.
that shouldn't be here anymore. So these things will have an effect, and it will take some time. People also forget that, the greatest president as far as economic policy that we've experienced in the last 75 years was Ronald Reagan. He started implementing his policies. He had to compromise with Tip O'Neill, but he got legislation passed. And yet we still had a recession in 19 I believe 1981 into 1982, and it took a little while, but by the time the 1984 election came around, he was running those Morning in America Again ads, and they hit. They were a big hit with voters because they could feel the economy being way better than it was in 1979 under Jimmy Carter. So it is, you have to counsel patience, I suppose. And this goes back to the polling that we showed that, after voting for Donald Trump in 2024, young voters are already sour because they don't see immediate improvement. I think a lot of that has to do with the way our we have it. We live in an instant gratification culture today, especially among people that are young. But so there needs to be patience, but there really does need to be some solid conservative libertarian free market legislation signed by President Trump. And this Republican Congress, I know they only have a very narrow majority in the House, but they have to at least try, because this economy is not going to turn around unless we put sound policies into law. And we also are fortunate enough to have a very competent Treasury Secretary, who is going to manage the as much as he can, because he's not on the Fed, but manage the economy from his position as Treasury Secretary, in a way that is much more competent than we had seen over the last 4 years under Joe Biden.
Bessent is stunningly impressive.
Oh.
He's fantastic. First of all, he's extremely intelligent.
Yeah.
Why any journalist would agree to an interview with Bessent is beyond me, because they're going to get destroyed. He's just smarter than they are. But his policies are rational, and he explains what is going on very, very well. And that brings up a point that I'm hesitant to make, but I'm going to say it anyway because I have a big mouth. I don't think that Donald Trump is doing a very good job of communicating the intent of his policies. And I think that he is being subsumed by the nonsense that he spouts on X the various social media outlets that he enjoys. I have not heard him articulate a view for America. He says all sorts of inflammatory things. This is the best economy ever, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, it may be, but show me why. Show me how.
Yeah.
And how are you going to make it better in the next 2 or 3 years? And I think that's one of his failings, and it frustrates me.
Oh, you're 100. I 100% agree with you, CBD. That is a great frustration. I mean, he is a different. he's one of one when it comes to presidents in the way he communicates. There's no doubt about that. And there might not ever be anyone. There will never really be anyone quite like him. What he. A regular president, a Reagan or a George H.W. Bush or somebody, would announce that I want to give an economic speech from my desk in the Oval Office to the American people to explain my policies. Donald Trump will never do that when it comes to the economy. He will just put his Truth Social posts out there that will be amplified on X. But he does need to do that. You're right. I mean, he talks to the press more than any president ever because they're always in his office. He always lets them in. He insults them, which I enjoy, but he is talking to them every day. And he will say things like, the economy is great. Look at this. Grocery prices are actually going down. Don't tell people that when they really don't feel it. Meat prices are still too high. I think egg prices have come down, but you can't just throw off these talking points. You have to convince people that things are getting better. The good news, I guess, is that he will have a chance to do that in his next or the first State of the Union address of his second term, which I guess will be in February, so it's not too far off. Because that's really going to be the platform where he has to not just explain his policies, but explain, as you said, why they will work, why this, his economic policy, he hasn't really articulated. 100% right, CBD. Donald Trump's huge failing when it comes to the economy is he has not laid out for the American people what his economic philosophy really is. He's taking steps that he thinks will help the economy. When he talks about it, he talks about, hey, I just got back from the Middle East and we're going to have $3 trillion of investment from the Gulf states in businesses here in the United States. Yeah, that's great. When is that going to happen? How is that going to happen? What industries are you talking about? So he's out there making deals and he's, of course, his tariff policy is really the linchpin of his economic policy is tariffs, using it as leverage, using it to bring manufacturing back to the United States. So, I guess I was before I thought about the tariffs thing again, of course, that really is the centrality of his economic policy is tariffs. But there has to be more than that. There has to be a longer term pro-growth agenda that is competently articulated to the American people. I would recruit Scott Bessent to do that every single day. In fact, I'd put him out on a speaking tour to be on, not just on the media, but to give major addresses at, at think tanks or at the Aspen Institute and things like that. Because if that message doesn't get out, these young people are going to continue to think they're being left behind and not thought about and not cared about when it comes to the future of this country. And that is going to kill the Republicans in the midterms, and it may end the MAGA movement before it really gets rolling.
That's a very good point. And MAGA is not doing itself any favors by toying with the Nazi curious in this minuscule, tiny, tiny little portion of the right, or maybe even the pseudo right. It's probably a better way to describe
Yeah.
them.
Yeah. I mean, I've ignored that whole thing. I mean, I've texted with my friends a lot that think about and follow this stuff all the time. And, I said a month ago, I said, nobody gives a shit about this stuff. Like, the only people who care about who Tucker Carlson is talking to or this person and the Groypers, the only people who care about that live between Washington, D.C. and New York City on the Acela Corridor. Nobody in the real world who isn't online all the time cares about any of this stuff. And I still believe that. I still see, because you and I read and follow people because we're very plugged into this stuff. Your average, MAGA voter in Pennsylvania somewhere who has a job and a wife and two kids and taking them to sports, they're not following this shit. They have no idea who these people are. This whole idea that we're going to be sitting here, but it does matter in the fact that it does distract the people that are supposed to be paying attention to who are supposed to be driving a conservative agenda through, having control of the government, that they're distracted by this complete bullshit that I think is completely fake. It doesn't matter. Yes, it's bad that, guy like Nick Fuentes has influencers. A family member of mine who is young even said to me once, it's like, I asked him what he watches. He was visiting and I watch a lot of YouTube and I watch politics, I watch sports videos, I watch, pop culture videos, but we're watching some of my favorite political content creators. And I asked him who do you watch? He enjoyed it. And he said, who I asked him who he watched. And he says, well, I've seen a couple of Nick Fuentes videos. And I said, oh, you got to be careful there. And he goes, oh, I know, I know. He's a complete nut job, but I watch it for entertainment. So there is some danger there, but I think it's by and large really overblown because, I think people see through that. It could be a little bit of rubbernecking on the part of a lot of people and not genuine embracing of really calling it a noxious philosophy is really underplaying it. It's very, very hateful.
Well, that's heartening to hear. Again, I'm plugged into that world, so it seems like I'm being overwhelmed by the mixed messages from the Republican Party and the
Yeah.
MAGA movement. But
Well,
yeah,
that's what I mean.
you.
The only way it's important is that it's distracting, the people that should know better and that we need to be communicating, and focused. It's taking the focus away from where it needs to be among those who need to be focused. That's the only danger.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, oh boy, what else is going on in our lovely, lovely world? Anything heartening aside from maybe Nick Fuentes isn't the most important person in the world?
Well, let's talk about somebody else who's horrible,
Oh, that's
who's no longer with us, but he is still horrible. Jeffrey Epstein, right? Isn't that what everybody's talking about now? The
yeah,
Epstein files.
folks, I thought maybe we would talk about this, but I don't know. I'm happy not to talk about it, and I'm happy to talk about it. It what I'm really enjoying over the last couple of weeks is the increasing amount of data that show that Jeffrey Epstein was a Democrat, didn't like Trump, and was going after him. Why the House and the Senate voted to release all the documents on the Epstein case is beyond me. I think it should be illegal to do what they are doing. I think that the sanctity of the grand jury should be respected. I think that there are hundreds, perhaps thousands of innocents who are named for no particular reason in the probably millions of pages of documents that are going to be available to the media, and they'll be tarred with this with this attachment to Epstein unfairly, I think. On the other hand, let's put it to bed. Maybe this is going to end it.
Yeah, I would hope so. I mean, I also, I mean, I follow a lot of people online. I don't know if your audience is familiar with Glenn Greenwald, who is on the left. He's a liberal. I disagree with him on a lot of stuff, but he's pretty absolutist when it comes to the release of documents that should be public, because we paid for them. This. I like to err on the side of disclosure over non-disclosure. And so, I want to know, and I hope that that's the one thing I'm actually cynical about, is that we should know a lot more about Jeffrey Epstein's relationship with our government, because there were obviously was one. I mean, hell, he was coaching a member of Congress
Oh, yeah.
during a during a an anti-Trump hearing in Congress. So, so we need to know a lot more about Jeffrey Epstein and his influence and partnership, frankly, with elements of our government. I don't want to hear about that. This could endanger national security. That's a cop out.
Oh,
That's
that's, yeah,
bullshit.
I agree 100%. It's bullshit. That's
It's
total bullshit.
total
And you
bullshit.
know
And
something? I don't care if it does. Because
right.
if Epstein was involved with foreign governments, I want to know about that, and national security be damned.
Right. And so, it was the reasons conspiracy theories crop up is because information that should be public is being withheld without legitimate justification. It's definitely, I want to see it all released. You may disagree with me, CBD, but I think releasing all of the information, as you said, finally puts it to bed, because we've been led along by the nose with Epstein revelations for years now. The absolute moronic own goal by Pam Bondi
Oh,
by
God.
inviting all of these people to the White House to give them binders full of the Epstein files, part one. I mean, I just saw a picture of that with Jack Posobiec holding up his binder to the camera. It says Epstein Files Part One, and there was nothing in there that wasn't already publicly available. It was a complete face plant. And ever since then, then we're told there are no actual files. Then you had the absurdity of Kash Patel and Dan Bongino saying there actually are no Epstein files. They don't really exist. There's nothing there. And then Trump has to say it. Look, I'm tired of going around on the carousel with this bullshit. I'm actually glad that that we're doing it in the proper way, which is having Congress vote on it instead of just having it unilaterally done. So now everybody's on the record for wanting this information out in the public. And a part of me suspects, and I think it's a solid suspicion, that this is going to be another oops, we shouldn't have done that, but mostly for Democrats. I think full revelation will show that what Donald Trump has said about his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein over the years has been 100% on the up and up and true, and that what we're going to see is that, as you had said there, CBD, that Jeffrey Epstein was working in partnership with tons of Democrats. And there is going to be a lot of Democrats who wish they did not vote this way, because they don't really know what's in there. And we're going to find out that a lot of it doesn't look good for them.
Yeah, that's a good point, but help me understand why you think that that releasing the entirety of the files and putting in jeopardy some true innocence is secondary to the need of the American people to know what's going on.
Well, I mean, well, maybe you can explain maybe what, how could, if somebody's just mentioned in those files somehow and they're innocent, how would that not be clear?
Because I know our journalistic practices in the United States over the last 250 years. Because they will look for names, and they simply will not provide context. So, some poor stewardess on one of those flights is going to get raked over the coals because she was involved with Epstein. And, for all I know, they'll be 10 journalists outside of her door badgering her and her children. What did your mommy do on the plane? And did you have sex with Donald Trump? Maybe I'm being silly, but the grand jury process is essentially 100% prosecutor driven. So there's no
Right.
there there's there there's no defense to temper the excesses of the prosecutor, and that's fine. That's the structure of the system. It doesn't bother me. That's what the courts are for, to temper that, the adversarial relationship between the defense and the prosecution. But that doesn't exist here. And I think that in the frenzy, the media are going to go after people who simply don't deserve it. Look, I want it to go away.
Yeah.
I want to know what happened, and then I want it to go away. Let's put it that way. So,
Yeah, I'm with you 100%.
maybe I should climb down off my high horse and accept your point, because it is a valid point. So I don't know. I
Yeah, I
just
mean, I think the American public can be trusted with the truth, and we have not gotten the full truth of Jeffrey Epstein. I still don't believe he hung himself. I'm sorry. I don't care what the video says. I'm never going to believe that. I'm never going to believe that he committed suicide. And I'm allowed to believe that. I'm an American, and I can believe whatever the hell I want. But we've never gotten the full story. If we don't, and we probably never will. The irony here, CBD, is that we're arguing about this, and that quote unquote all of the Epstein files will be released.
Yeah.
No, they no. You know
No,
what?
they
They
won't.
probably won't.
Exactly.
Anyway, so. Again, the reason why conspiracy theories prop up is because the American people are kept in the dark on purpose. Now, is it because the people running our government want the conspiracy theories out there because it's better to distract the public with that than to actually reveal the truth? Who knows? But I want to get closer to the latter than experiencing endless conspiracy theories into the future.
Yeah. Okay. That's rational. I'll accept that.
Okay.
All right, you convinced me. Anyway, we're coming
Wow.
up on an hour, so
Yep.
I'm sure that that Jim is sick and tired of talking to me. Jim, thank you very, very much for joining me. Sefton, we have to get you back, because Sefton, as well as I, love it when you're on. Once again, Jim Lakely of the Heartland Institute. He is the Executive Vice President and Director of Communications. Go to heartland.org and poke around. Go to those two polls. It's a Rasmussen Heartland collaboration. Read those polls, but also look around and on the rest of the site. It really is wonderful. I don't, you know, something, Jim. Jim's last check bounced to me, so I don't really have to tout him, but I'm going to do it anyway, because it's a great, great site and a great organization. Anyway, Jim, thank you very, very much for joining me. I appreciate
It
it.
is my pleasure as always. Thank you so much.
Take care.